Blog Talk Radio.
Everywhere I go, all around the world, people still support Mike Vick. So regardless of what I go through, people are going to love me, man.
People are going to love him, and hopefully you love this show, too. Hello and welcome to 8 in the Box. I'm your host, Football Rob. That was Michael Vick, and jury's still out whether or not people still love him. I really don't know about all that. So anyways, today's show is brought to you by NFLDraftBible.com and the Fantasy Sports Channel. And on today's program, we're going to be discussing a lot of things going on in the NFL. The NFL's decision to fine the Jets and former head coach Eric Mangini. We're going to tell you how this penalty is related to gambling. Oh, yes, we're going to be talking about gambling, and we want some reaction from the chat room on that topic. Michael Crabtree, he remains unsigned. We're going to break down that situation. And Chad Ochocinco, he's got plans this Sunday. We're going to tell you why those plans will probably end up being canceled. Who is more finished? We're going to be talking about that. McNabb or Tomlinson? They both got injuries right now. Bo Marchand, our resident NFL draft expert, will be breaking that down as well. Some key matchups, of course, Patriots and Jets. That's very juicy. We're going to get into that. Saints and Eagles, we'll get into that. And Oakland and Kansas City, well, you know what? Actually, this is an NFL show. We don't cover high school football, so we will not be talking about Oakland versus Kansas City. Definitely not. And if you want me to, I still won't. So throughout the show, we're going to be hearing from Bo Marchand. We just mentioned him. He'll be calling in. Justin Van Fulpen will be also calling in. NFL draft guru, who also covers the NFC North pretty extensively. We're going to have to ask him about Jay Cutler and his awful performance. 4 interceptions. Could have been 6 interceptions. We'll be getting some insight on that. And Kelron Sykes, the scout for the St. Louis Rams, he'll be talking all things NFC West. A lot of surprising teams in the NFC West this year. You got the San Francisco 49ers, of course. of course, they won their game, their opening game against the Arizona Cardinals. Going to get some insight to see how they look from Kelron. So, let's see, is anybody in the chat room right now? Let's go to the chat room, see what's going on. Guys, put something up on the chat room. Start talking. Come on, this is football. We're not talking about rocket science here. We're just having fun talking football. That's what we're doing. So let's get into the topics. Let's definitely get into the topics because the New York Jets are talking some trash. New York football Jets are talking some trash, and it's led by their head coach, Rex Ryan. Rex Ryan's talking some trash. He's saying that he needs the fan support. He needs the fan support. He sent them a voicemail, and let me read you the voicemail. Then we'll get Bo Marchand to weigh in and see if he has anything to say about this. It says, "Hey, it's Rex Ryan, head coach of the New York Jets. I want to let you know how much we need you this week. I've already admitted that the Patriots have a better head coach. They've got a better quarterback than us, but we're going to see who has a better team. And the other part, the reason I'm so confident, is they got to go face you, and they've got to face the rest of our fans. My challenge to you is that we need you at your best. So come get ready for 4 quarters. We really need you." And he goes on to say a lot of things about we really need you, blah, 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 and he's not as good as Bill Belichick. So, having said all that, let's hit the phone lines now, and let's talk to Bo. Bo, do you think that this will galvanize the troops, and do you think that the Jets have a chance this Sunday against the Patriots?
No, Rob, I don't think that's going to go too far when it comes to the playing field this Sunday. I think it's a nice attempt for Coach Ryan to get the boys in line and get the fan support behind them, but I think the hangover of New England, you know, they got by, obviously, Monday night, and I think you'll see a more focused team in New England this week.
And also, I guess it's trickled down to the players. Kerry Rhodes claims that he will hit Tom Brady more than 6 times, and he says, "I promise you that." So he's promising that Tom Brady will be under siege, and we saw we saw how good they were against the Texans defensively. Do you think they could do that against the Patriots?
He might hit Tom Brady six times. Maybe Tom Brady's going for a one-yard goal line touchdown, and they decide not to pass it to Chris Baker or Ben Watson. So I think that's the only time Rose is going to get to him six times. Yeah.
Really? So you're just not drinking any Kool-Aid served up to you by the New York Jets?
You know what? Six times is a lot. I could say if you say you're going to get to him a couple times, but six times, Rob, I mean, that's an extensive high amount of times for anybody to get to any quarterback, let alone a defensive back. And if he's, I mean, this is one thing. If I'm Bill Belichick, the defensive coordinator, looking at this stuff, and I'm knowing their strong safety, free safety, Kerry Rhodes is going to be playing in the backfield all day, that means that all my toys, the Joey Galloway and Wes Welker and Randy Moss and Julian Edelman, all those guys are going to be open down the field. So, yeah, he might get to Brady. Nonetheless, he might hit him six times, but that means they're going to get six in the end zone one way or another. I don't think he could have that guy playing on the line that much. I mean, because the Patriots don't run the ball.
And we also saw in the Monday night opener that the Patriots, they love to dink and dunk. So if you're going to blitz Tom Brady, he's definitely going to find those receivers underneath. So you definitely like the Patriots in this game, but you know what? I'm going to take the Jets. I know they're a dog at home. They're a four-point dog. And I know you're probably going to disagree with me there, but I'm just going to go have to take them because I just – this team has more personality than any Jets team I've ever seen, and it's got much more personality than the team last year with Eric Mangini, who's just like the most boring coach ever, and it's just maybe he's selling us a bunch of bull, but I'm excited. I'm actually excited to be a Jet fan right now.
Yeah, you know, Rob, I agree with you. I mean, I think the Jets got a nice swagger with, Ryan. I mean, it seems like they just, they got a swagger. I mean, during the off season, training camp when he was talking smack with the Dolphins and they were going back and forth at it. I mean, I think the team kind of gets a nice feel from them. And, I mean, you being so close to New York, I mean, you probably hear a lot more than I do. But, I mean, Mangini, like you said, I mean, if you could have not – bigger polar opposites between Ryan and Mangini. And I think the team feels refreshed. I think as you as a fan, rooting for the Jets, you feel refreshed. Because, you got a pulse now. This team feels alive, And I do like, the trash talking. I think from the Jets' point of view, that does. It builds up your confidence. It means we're not going to just, have these guys come in and, beat us down. We're going to give these guys a real fight. And, like I said, I have the utmost respect for the Patriots. So, I'm not a Patriots fan. I just, until everything kind of runs its course, I'm just going to probably, no matter who the Patriots play, besides themselves, I'm always going to take the Patriots. I just have to. Between Brady and Belichick, I think the only thing that can stop them is their defense. I mean, I think their defense has got a lot of questions. It's held them back the last 2 years, or 3 years, minus last year. I mean, you go back to the Colts and pass in the AFC Championship. They're winning, 21-6, I think, Rob, at halftime?
Right.
They give up 32 points in the second quarter. 32 points. I mean, people forget that. I mean, they were 21-6 at halftime on the road. You would assume the Patriots close that out and go to the Super Bowl. But they don't. They blow the lead. And then, the Colts and the Bears play. And then we all know the Giants Super Bowl, 2 minutes left, 35 seconds to go. He hits Plaxico in the end zone. So
and
that defense is coming.
That's the other thing we were talking about, the pressure. And the Patriots, they're susceptible to the pressure. And we saw in the Super Bowl that, if you have a great pass rush, you can eliminate a lot of these big plays downfield, and that's what the Giants did a couple years ago, and I think that's what the Jets are trying to aim for because, honestly, you can't really cover Randy Moss. I don't care how good Darrell Revis is. You can't cover him, and you can't cover Wes Welker at the same time, so you're going to have to get pressure, and that's really what this Jet defense is based on right now, and they're getting Sean Ellis back, who was suspended last week, so they'll be even better than they were, I think, against the Texans, and that's one of the reasons why I'm picking them this week. We're talking with Bo Marchand of NFLDraftBible.com. I'm your host, Football Rob, and I see Steel City Storm is in the chat room, and I remember ripping Ben Roethlisberger last year during the Super Bowl, and I remember Steel City Storm, after Ben Roethlisberger did his thing, he said, shut your face, Rob. And I was like, you're right. I'll have to shut my face right now. And I just want to say hello to Steel City Storm. I know we have a nice little history going, and I just wanted to send my condolences to Ben Roethlisberger, who... No, I'm just kidding. All right. So anyways, back to what we're talking about. We're with Bo Marchand, and he wrote an article on DraftBible.com, Inside the Numbers, talking about LaDainian Tomlinson. Very in-depth article, a lot of statistics and figures for you stat guys to just, you know, munch over and look at. So at the top of the show, Bo, I posed the question to the people in the chat room, who's more finished, Donovan McNabb or LaDainian Tomlinson? I would have to say LaDainian Tomlinson, just based on the position that he plays. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, Rob, I agree with you totally. You know, I think it's, you know, I don't think anyone, one of these athletes, as competitive they are, want to admit when the body's kind of breaking down and it just isn't there. And I think that's what LaDainian thing is going through now. I mean, the last two seasons he couldn't finish because he was hurt. I mean, he missed the playoff games. I mean, Monday night, you know, he gets banged up. The last drive, he's on the sidelines. They're feeding the ball to Darren Sproles. You know, this is Phillip Rivers' team now. And like I said in that piece, I mean, I don't think his time in San Diego might be after this year. I think they'll get rid of him. And I think, you know, like I said in the piece, like an Emmitt Smith going to the star-hungry Arizona Cardinals at the time. You know, you get a guy like LT to maybe go to a team that's kind of needy of some public hype and maybe, you know, a running back. But, yeah, I agree with you totally. I think Donovan McNabb still has a lot left. You know, Donovan McNabb is one of those guys, for whatever reasons, I don't know. He just has never had the support of the fans or been endeared by the public. I don't know why. It even seems like the team. I mean, since this day he got drafted, I mean, we all remember Philly fan upset because they didn't take Ricky Williams.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it's one of those things. I mean, I don't know if he's really ever had the weapons, I mean, receiver-wise. I mean, I always think about him. I'm not saying he is John Elway, but I always think about John Elway before he had Rod Smith and Shannon Sharpe and Terrell Davis. You know, he was going to the Super Bowls and losing them with Gerald Willites in the back, Sammy Winders and Ricky Natils. You know, people don't think about those guys, but he got them there. I mean, that was the team. And I think McNabb kind of falls into that, you know, category. I mean, he put up his best numbers when he had Owens. And Owens, besides Michael Westbrook or Brian Westbrook in the backfield, I mean, Owens is the only true playmaker that he's ever played with. I mean, think about it. I mean, Freddie Mitchell, Reggie Brown, Kevin Curtis. I mean, you know, these guys aren't exactly household names and guys that I think defensive coordinators spend, you know, their nights waking up going, oh, my gosh, how are we going to stop Reggie Brown? You know, like you said, Randy Moss, a whole other story. So,
and you can't forget the immortal Dietrich Gels. That player was... He was an unbelievable talent for the Philadelphia Eagles in the late 90s.
There you go. Like I said, I feel bad for McNabb. For whatever reason, he doesn't get any respect. He doesn't get love. I mean, I don't think Philly gives anybody love, but, I mean, the persona of Don McNabb is he just, you know, I don't think he just gets that respect that I do think he deserves. I think he's a better quarterback than people give him credit for.
Yeah, he's the best quarterback. I would say he's the best quarterback in Eagles history. Wouldn't you agree with that?
Yeah, you know what? And since you brought that up, we were texting earlier. I have to hear the Jaws impersonation.
All right, for everybody in the chat room, I guess it's time now because we have a nice little crew here. I do a great Ron Jaworski impression, and I want everybody's feedback on this. I'm very confident in what I could do, and... You know, if you like it, great. If you don't, tell me also. I need some feedback here. So here we go. I've been working on this, by the way. Randy Moss is split out wide to the left. He goes in motion, and the corner does not follow. This is a strong indication of zone coverage. How do you like them apples, huh?
Oh, I love those apples. I think I'm going to have you... When you come on Monday Tailgate, dude, I'm just going to have you come on as Jaworski, and we're just going to do the show like that.
That would be great. I can do that. I can process information.
You know what you're going to have to do? You're going to have to start doing that voice, but do it with everything. Like, go to McDonald's and order, like, a Big Mac and Happy Meal with French fries.
That would be ridiculous. That would be
totally
ridiculous.
Or ask a girl out like that.
Oh, yeah, that's not going to happen.
You know, Jaworski at a bar. You should, next week you should bring that to everybody. Jaworski at a bar asking a girl out with that voice.
If we could get Ron Jaworski on this show next week, I will do that voice for him.
Well, I'm gonna try my best to get him on the show. Like I said, I don't know if I can, but I am going to try my best to get him on your show next week.
All right. This is Bo Marchand. I'm with Bo Marchand of NFLDraftBible.com. I'm your host, Football Rob, and also be sure to check out College Football Insider's newsletter, available now on NFLDraftBible.com, and a lot of other topics we have to get to. You know, we were clowning around there for a little while, but I do want to get to some other topics with Bo while I still have him on the line here. Michael Crabtree, still unsigned after week one of the NFL season. Is this guy, like, just brainless? I don't understand. He would rather sit home and not make millions? What's going on with this guy?
Yeah, I mean, I've talked to a few people, and they all agree they don't understand what he's thinking, because he's only going to decrease his stock by going into next season. I think Justin Van Boelpen, who you'll have on later in the show, you know, he's not going to be allowed to go to the combine. He's not going to be allowed to work out for teams next season. You know, and his draft stock's going to drop. Jason Lockonfora, the NFL Network, when I spoke to him, he said he thought this would get done. He was surprised that it wasn't done. And, you know, because for Crabtree, it makes no financial sense. And if the whole problem is about financial and money, he's killing himself here. And I think it also comes down to pride. I mean, he's convinced that he should be the number one pick, or at least the number one receiver taken, which, you know, the only thing I can say is, you know, pick up your beef and get it with Al Davis and the Oakland Raiders for taking, you know, Darius Hayward Bay.
Well, that's one thing I wanted to bring up with you, Bo. Even though everybody was making fun of Al Davis, and they should because he doesn't know what he's doing 90% of the time, but having said all that, it looks like they picked the right receiver, because at least they signed their guy. Because I would assume that if they picked Crabtree like everyone expected them to, he would have done the same kind of nonsense. He would have pulled the same stuff, because that's just the kind of guy he is.
Yeah, and you know, the first time I caught wind of any of this is, or at least his personality, or there was some kind of, you know, skepticism about taking him, was when we were doing the shows right after the combine. We had a couple guys in Indianapolis, and they were talking about Crabtree, and they were kind of sour on Crabtree, which for the first time, that was news to me. I thought he was kind of like the, you know, I'm not saying, you know, the perfect, you know, like a Marvin Harrison type guy on the field, but, you know, he didn't seem flamboyant off issues and attitude and all that stuff. But they brought up a lot of red flags, and since that time, I mean, you know, because it was something that took me by surprise when I heard it. So I've always kind of, every time I hear Crabtree's name, that's the first thing I think of, because, you know, it shocked me. And now, you know, it's, what, September, what, 17th? And, you know, he's still unsigned. There's no progress. And, you know, I think Singletary and the team, you know, I don't think, you know Singletary isn't going to care. I mean, you know he's not going to pay this kid, you know, if anything, he's going to make it that much harder on him, you know? I mean, you saw what he did with Vernon Davis last season. I mean, you're with the team and on the boat.
Right, and the other thing, Bo, you've got to remember, if he sits out a year, he's obviously, you know, if he's a year out of football and he goes back into the draft next year, you got Dez Bryant, who is a monster wide receiver. I would guarantee that Dez Bryant would be the first wide receiver taken, and Michael Crabtree would be in the same spot he is this year.
Yeah, I think he'd even go lower, because he already looks like a head case.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, he's not endearing himself to any GM out there. I mean, if you're looking, like you said, I mean, next season rolls around, you have Dez Bryant on the board or Michael Crabtree. Who are you taking? I mean, because you're like, well, this kid sat out 1 year, you know, unless you think you can get him on the cheap end because he already sat out a year, and then it'll be desperate. But, you know, and the thing that drives me nuts about this, Rob, more than anything, is when they finally do, and if they do come to a, you know, and everybody gets what they want. That's what drives me nuts the most. You know, how these things, you know, prolong to this point is you know, it's crazy. Just crazy.
Yeah, it just boggles your mind as a sports fan, because, you know, he's definitely going to get whatever he signs for. He's going to be a millionaire, and I'm not a millionaire, so I'd like to be one day, and if I had the opportunity to be one, I wouldn't sit out for more money. So, I mean, it's just totally ridiculous. Well, that was Bo Marchand. I want to thank him for calling in. It was a great segment there. And let's go to Kelron Sykes. I believe we have him on the line. Kelron is a scout for the St. Louis Rams. How you doing, my man?
Hey, how's it going?
It's going good, going good. I heard you had some phone troubles there. What's going on with your cell phone?
Yeah, I accidentally was messing around with my 3-year-old yesterday, and I dropped my cell phone in the toilet, and it just went haywire. So hopefully T-Mobile will reimburse me with a new phone in the next couple of days.
Oh, boy, that's going to be an interesting next couple of days for you. So we were just talking about Michael Crabtree, and being that you're a scout in the NFC West, he hasn't signed, obviously, but have you seen much of him? Can you tell us anything about him in terms of what kind of player he is? Do you think he should be sitting out this long?
Well, I mean, I heard you guys mention, whatever he signs for, he's going to be a millionaire. And, with the crisis that we're in with the economy now, I mean, that's kind of asinine for him to be sitting out and asking for the buku dollars. Crabtree is an exceptional athlete, a phenomenal receiver. I mean, he's some of the games that he had last year, versus Texas and some of the bigger games. I mean, he was just great. But I think what he's doing now is kind of hurting this year's class and the years to come class, because you're going to have an individual who may ask for, $15, $20 million up front when he is a 12th, 13th pick, or say, hey, I'm better than Hayward Bay. My numbers produce that. It's shown that in the past, and, I've done this at X, Y, and Z, and, I deserve money, and it's kind of hurting the upcoming classes.
And we're with Kelron Sykes, a scout for the St. Louis Rams. So staying in that division, NFC West, the 49ers, they won their first game beating the NFC champion. It took me totally by surprise. They beat the defending NFC champion Arizona Cardinals in week one. What do you see them doing throughout this season with new coach Mike Singletary?
Well, Singletary is a very intense guy. I had an opportunity to meet with him at the Senior Bowl last year and spoke with him for about 15, 20 minutes. I mean, every week you're going to have an intense, hard-hitting, hit you in the mouth type of team, in regards to the 49ers. He's a great coach, and I wish him all the best of luck. He has a phenomenal staff there, and the pieces are in place for them to be successful. You would like to see them have more of a home run hit at the receiver spot, and, obviously Crabtree will fulfill that need, if and when he signs. But, right now I would say, the 49ers are on task of doing some great things in the future.
And let's talk about your team, the St. Louis Rams. They put up a goose egg. They lost 28-0 against the Seattle Seahawks in week one. Were there any positives? I know you had three turnovers.
Yes.
In that game, and you had some pressure on the quarterback. Were there any positives at all coming out of that game for you guys?
Well, just the overall effort. Spags is a very intense guy as well. Him and Singletary are sort of in the same lines of intensity. But, it's just a matter right now of getting more playmakers on the field. Right now we're lacking that. Well, the Rams are lacking that as of right now. But, the pieces are in place. Billy Devaney's exceptional GM, on down to Tony Softley, the player personnel director. So the pieces are in place to be successful. It's just a matter of coming up with draft picks in the future, free agent signings after the season to get that ball rolling, so to speak. But, every week you expect the Rams to be competitive and they should pull out a couple of wins here and there. But in terms of, over 500 season, I don't know. That's hard to foresee right now.
And can you update us on a couple of the rookies, Jason Smith, the second overall pick, and also James Laurinaitis? I've heard that James Laurinaitis is further along in his development than the number one pick, Jason Smith. Is there any truth to that, or can you give us a little insight on that?
Where Laurinaitis came in, his sister from Ohio State, was somewhat similar to what's going on there in terms of his downhill play, in terms of him being covered up and him being able to roam sideline to sideline. Obviously, with the defense, with the offensive tackle, I mean, you're going to come up with those edge rush, and it's going to take time for him. I mean, Jason is a very aggressive guy, and sometimes he's over-aggressive, too over-aggressive sometimes in his pass sets. But, once he calms down and game takes its toll and it starts to slow down for him, I expect him to be a Pro Bowler in the near future.
And how about the receiving core? I know it's been pretty much jumbled up because you lost Isaac Bruce
yes.
recently,
yes.
and you lost Torrey Holt, and you pretty much have to start from scratch. Who do you think is going to emerge as your number one receiver during this season?
That's a good question. Like I said, right now I think that would probably be the question mark. That's the million-dollar question of the day, just in terms of that go-getter receiver. Right now, I would say, you know, Randy McMichael is overall the number one option right now, or excuse me, number two option right now, and that's just been pretty much backing up Stevie J in terms of receiving and whatnot. I think right now we're just lacking the Rams are lacking the home run threat and that, you know, you need to be successful in the league. But Randy McMichael is the tight end that's, you know, he's a great guy. You know, he had great numbers in Miami, and he's trying to resurface himself, you know, as a top-tier receiver, or excuse me, tight end in the league.
Yeah, absolutely. He had some great years with the Miami Dolphins. So on the outside, though, Donnie Avery and Laurent Robinson, I know those are your as of right now, those are your top guys. Which of those two do you have more faith in terms of getting some big plays down the field?
Well, hopefully Robinson can establish himself as that home run threat. I mean, you know, based upon what coverage you're facing out there on defense, I mean, right now, being a young guy, you have to be able to, you know, run routes based upon or be able to recognize defenses or coverages, you know, on your route runs. And right now, like I said, they're young guys, and, you know, they're adapting to the league, so to speak. And, you know, this is week one, and week two, week three, you slowly, surely see these guys develop. And that's what you want in young guys. You want to see week in and week out improvements from these guys. So by the latter part, or middle to latter part of the season, you know, you're able to stretch the field more. You're able to hit more intermediate routes.
Mm-hmm. And I'm your host, Football Rob. We are on NFLDraftBible.com. You can also check out the College Football Insiders newsletter available now on NFLDraftBible.com. And we're with Kelron Sykes, the scout for the St. Louis Rams. Last question before I let you go, Kelron. We have a good matchup here, week two against the Redskins. You guys are heavy underdogs, but the Redskins are coming off a tough defeat in Giants Stadium against a Super Bowl caliber team in the New York Giants. What do you think you guys have to do in week two to get a win on the road?
Match their intensity. The Giants, the Redskins are going to come in and hit you in the mouth. That NFC East is a monster division. You know, all four of those teams are very physical, and we have to master physicality in terms of lining up and stopping the run, you know, stopping play action pass, and getting pressure on the quarterback. I mean, those are the key factors to success. And obviously Stevie J, you know, he's going to touch the ball, you know, maybe 20, 25 times throughout the game. We have to establish a run game, you know, and let 8-9 people come to the box and then go vertical, you know, get McMichael the ball and get some of those younger receivers the ball so we can be successful this week.
All right, that's some great stuff, great insight from Kelron Sykes. Really appreciate him coming on. Good, a lot of insight on the NFC West. It's going to be a surprising division this year with Seattle now healthy and San Francisco looking to be on the right track, and, of course, Arizona defending the NFC crown in 2009. So that's going to be a hot division, I think an underrated division. And speaking of underrated divisions, let's talk about the NFC North with Justin Van Volpen. He's going to break that stuff down. So, Justin, first question to you, my man. We had Jay Cutler throw a total bomb in Week One. What do you make of his performance against the Green Bay Packers?
Well, you know, he looked a little rattled. He looked unsettled. And, you know, obviously his lack of timing with the receivers really showed to the forefront on some of those interceptions, you know, because either the receivers weren't running the routes, weren't right routes, or he was on the, you know, on a different page and he wasn't thrown to the right spots there. And it really, you know, made for a bad showing for him. And also it didn't help that Matt Forte, you know, averaged less than 3 yards a carry there, you know, far as against the Green Bay Packers. And the Green Bay Packers were, you know, had changed to the 3-4 defense and was putting a lot of pressure on Cutler. He settled down a little bit in the second half, but still wasn't able to you know, salvage that game. And hopefully maybe this is his, you know, bad game. And if we go forward, we'll see, you know, the Jay Cutler everyone was expecting in Chicago.
And, you know, even though I thought it was a total mistake to get rid of him, and Josh McDaniels should be ashamed of himself, I think that this is probably why they wanted to move him, because he's very erratic. He has a lot of up-and-down moments, And do you think that this will continue throughout the season, or is this just a blip on the radar screen and he'll just go back to being a Pro Bowl caliber quarterback?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a blip on the radar. I think, you know, I think as he gets more comfortable in, you know, with the Bears receivers, and you know, they don't really have any big-time receivers, and Green Bay did a good job of taking away Greg Olsen, which is their tight end, which is really their number one receiver, even though he is a tight end. You know, as far as, you know, Devin Hester made some good plays. Earl Bennett, I mean, he's got his first catch ever in the NFL, and this is his second year. And they really didn't throw the screen passes to Matt Forte. And I thought they put too much pressure on, really, you know, Cutler the beginning of the game. You know, I thought it was a bad game plan there by Ron Turner, the offensive coordinator. And they needed to go back of what works, what they, you know, were successful, and that's run the ball with Matt Forte, throwing some screen passes. And then let's try to go ahead and go to the 5-7 set drops there with Cutler when he gets comfortable there. And they still have a shot to win that game, you know, even with them with Cutler throwing 4 interceptions.
And another thing that we have to touch on, we're with Justin Van Vulpen of the NFLDraftBible.com. I got to talk to you about Devin Hester. This guy looks like a legit receiver. He's not just a fast guy that happens to play wide receiver. He seems to have refined his game, and I was wondering if you saw the same thing that that I saw in week one.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, he's a guy who, you know, he came, you know, he was at Miami, he was, you know, played corner, played receiver, was basically just a return guy, and that's why, you know, he was drafted as high as he was there, and he came in the league as a cornerback and has really transitioned to a receiver. He's able to, you know, run better routes and do a lot better things as far as on, you know, as far as, you know, flipping his hips and getting into his breaks and different things like that, a lot better this season than he was last season. I think he'll progress as well as his development as wide receiver, and as they get comfortable, him and Jay Cutler, I think we could see some big things out of Devin Hester.
And, of course, we have to also touch on the fact that Brian Urlacher is out for the season with a wrist injury. Do you think a lot of talk was made about Derek Brooks coming in, possibly replacing him? They haven't yet signed him. They're going to just keep their young core talent and see if they can perform. Do you think that's a mistake to just let Derek Brooks just float around there and not pick him up?
I think so, because I think what they could have done is they could have moved Lance Briggs to the middle linebacker position and let Derek Brooks play the position that he had played, you know, because they still play that Tampa 2 defense there with Lovie Smith, and you know, as far as Rod Marinelli is the defensive line coach, he was there with Lovie Smith in Tampa when they were successful with Derek Brooks. Derek Brooks, yeah, he is not to the, you know, the Pro Bowl type caliber linebacker, but you know, he could definitely help that team that did sign Tim Shaw as far as a young linebacker there, you know, was with Jacksonville and got released. So, you know, and he's, you know, the Penn State guy who played well at times there at Penn State, but he's not Derek Brooks. So, you know, and I just don't think that book is closed yet. I think they want to see what the players can do this week against, you know, the Pittsburgh Steelers, and then, you know, make some assessments as we go, you know, farther down the road.
Yeah, Pittsburgh Steelers and Chicago Bears, that's an excellent matchup in week two. What do you think of the keys to that game? I know that Ben Roethlisberger had a come-from-behind victory in week one. How do you think Chicago is going to game plan against Pittsburgh?
Well, one thing is, you know, Pittsburgh, like Chicago, wasn't able to run the ball in their first week matchup. I mean, Pittsburgh had less than 30 yards rushing total against the Tennessee Titans, and that's without Albert Haynesworth. So, I think really, you know, we saw what the defensive line was able to do, you know, last week against the Chicago Bears defensive line against Green Bay. And, you know, that probably was one of the poorest offensive lines ever to win the Super Bowl there with Pittsburgh Steelers. So a lot of pressure is going to be put on, you know, Ben Roethlisberger. And, you know, that to me, that's the biggest matchup there is, you know, as far as the Bears' defensive line against the Steelers' offensive line. If the Steelers can block, you know, as far as Mark Anderson, Ali Agumie, you know, Alex Brown, you know, Tommy Harris, you know, if they can go ahead and block those guys up and let them get the heat on Roethlisberger, I think the Steelers can win. But it's home. I think Jay Cutler is going to have a better game than what he did on the road against Green Bay. I think they'll kind of get back to the identity of the Chicago Bears and running the football there in week two and get Matt Forte and you know, as far as be able to pull out a victory there in the first game in Soldier Field.
And we're with Justin Van Vulpen. I'm your host, Football Rob. And we've got to, since you're the NFC North guy, we've got to talk. I really don't want to waste a whole lot of time talking about a team that's lost 18 games in a row, but the Detroit Lions, they are playing next week. I don't know why they continue to play. They should just, you know, call it quits. But do you think they could finally win a game? They haven't won in 18 consecutive games. Can they pull an upset against the Vikings next week?
You know, they've got to win once. I mean, they got to break that streak somehow. I don't know if
yeah,
it's coming.
That's
I don't think
thing. They got to, like, you know, odds on. I mean, just odds. They got to win, right?
Yeah, I don't think it's coming against, you know, the Minnesota Vikings there. You know, at Ford Field. You know, that's one thing. It is at home. You know, as far as people are excited in Detroit, you know, about Matthew Stafford, even though he did throw three interceptions against New Orleans Saints in a loss, but they were in that game. They showed a lot better as far as heart and determination. This, as far as if we just go back week one from last year to week one this year against Atlanta, you know, last year and against New Orleans this year, they showed better. They have a better defense. It's still, you know, as far as Favre is going to be throwing the football, and he got Adrian Peterson, you know, so it's going to be a, you know, a tough matchup. But and I see them falling short, but they'll be in that game against the Minnesota Vikings.
Yeah, what do you make of Favre, Justin? I saw that he pretty much managed the game last week against the Cleveland Browns, and you know, that's not something he usually does. He usually goes out on a limb, forces footballs into tight areas that they shouldn't be forced into. Do you think he'll continue to do that, or will his eyes just light up and he'll take a lot more chances in week two?
You know, I think he's getting more used to the receivers and the players he has around him. I think that's why he kind of was that game manager. And Adrian Peterson went off, you know, as far as last week. And I think the thing is, you know, he'll start getting back to the gunslinger here, you know, starting a week two against the Detroit Lions, because he knows, you know, he saw what Drew Brees was able to do, and he wants to be able to put up, you know, six touchdowns as well.
I predict three interceptions for Brett Favre. Do you agree with that?
Well, you know, I mean,
I want to flip that. He will throw three interceptable balls, but since they are the Lions, they will drop all three. How's
that's
that?
More likely. That's more likely. Yeah.
Okay, perfect. We want some reaction from the chat room. How many interceptions do you think Brett Favre will throw? I say three interceptable balls, but none of them will be caught. I want to see what other people, Steel City Storm, I know we have a nice little relationship going. Why don't you weigh in on this? You know, I mean, you know, help me out here. So we're with Justin Van Volpen of NFLDraftBible.com. We can also plug the College Football Insiders newsletter, available now on NFLDraftBible.com, and also check out the Fantasy Sports Channel on Blog Talk Radio. So enough with the NFC North. We got some. We know you're the draft guru, so we have a college football game tonight: Georgia Tech versus the Miami Hurricanes. The U. They're trying to restore the great tradition there. Both teams are in the top 25, so it's going to be an interesting game. I'm looking at Daryl Sharpton of the U, the University of Miami linebacker. Who else can you tell us to watch out for in this game?
Well, I mean, obviously, Jonathan Dwyer, the running back there at Georgia Tech, I mean, he's a junior. He's a guy who, you know, could declare early and be a guy who's, you know, possibly a first-round draft pick. I mean, a lot of teams like what he's able to do. They do run a triple option there at Georgia Tech. U doesn't have as far as much talent that you're going to see in the NFL, maybe in a couple years, but nothing as far as at that senior level. In Georgia Tech, I mean, they're a good team, but, you know, besides a couple underclassmen, I mean, there's no real seniors that, unless they declare, that, you know, will be drafted very highly.
Who do you think wins the game? I'm going with the U.
I'm going Georgia Tech. I think Georgia Tech, as far as they're on a roll, you know, I think Miami's, you know, kind of played above, you know, their head as far as talent level, so I'm going to go Georgia Tech.
All right, forget you then, you know. I mean, I was just trying to get you to agree with me, but you want to do that? Fine, whatever. All right, so we're with Justin Van Volpen, NFLDraftBible.com. I'm your host, Football Rob, on this Thursday afternoon, and a lot of things going on. Now that we've mentioned the University of Miami, let's mention the University of Florida. And I found this story pretty interesting, Justin. The Jacksonville Jaguars are in danger of pretty much their whole season, all their home games are going to be blacked out. So they're actually making a push. They're making a push right now to select Tim Tebow in the upcoming draft, even though the draft order has not even been close to being decided yet. The only thing we know for sure is that the Raiders will be picking first. But how do you think Tim Tebow would look in a Jacksonville Jaguar uniform when you have David Garrard already there?
Well, I think the question mark is, you know, with Tim Tebow, there's no for sure thing that he's going to be an NFL quarterback. We know he's a phenomenal athlete. He's a great, as far as character guy, you know, as far as what he's done off the football field as well as on it. Big, strong kid. But as far as when we look at him and we, you know, as far as break down him, is he an NFL quarterback? And you know, doing the due diligence and then also talking with NFL scouts and stuff like that, a lot of teams say no. A lot of teams say, hey, he's probably, you know, at best a wildcat-type quarterback, maybe an H-back tight end, you know, moving position. But they don't see him being a legitimate first-round talent-type quarterback because we've seen so many of those guys, as far as the athletic guy who doesn't really have the great arm and, you know, plays in the spread offense. And really, the guy that he really kind of compares to is a Vince Young type player. And we saw what he's done in the NFL, you know, after, you know, teams finally caught on to him was, hey, you know, take away his run, you know, and let him have as far as the passing game. If you do that, you can shut Vince Young down. And as far as Tim Tebow really kind of, you know, mirrors what Vince Young is able to do. You know, not that pure pocket passer, more of a good athlete, strong runner, than a guy who's going to beat you with his arm and with as far as, you know, his accuracy.
And that's the whole problem that the Jaguars face right now. They want to get fans in the seats because 17,000 season ticket holders did not renew, and obviously it's because the economy is terrible right now, and that's why they're struggling to keep their fan base. So this is why they're talking about possibly selecting Tim Tebow in September. I don't know, you know, you kind of have to wait till April to do this, but it already came out that they're interested in selecting Tim Tebow. Would it be a mistake for an NFL team to spend a first-round pick on Tebow? I think it would be.
Yeah, I think definitely, you know, as far as, you know, he's not a guy who, you know, he doesn't fit into that legitimate first-round type talent quarterback. He's not a Matthew Stafford. He's not a Mark Sanchez, guys who were drafted high. You know, those guys were NFL quarterbacks. Yes, they were great college players, and that's what Tim Tebow is, but those guys translated well into the NFL system, you know, and Tim Tebow doesn't. And, you know, Tim Tebow's a guy who's going to get drafted, there's no doubt about it, and he's a guy who's going to get an opportunity. You know, some teams might get an opportunity to be a developmental prospect as a quarterback and see if they can, you know, work out the kinks in his throwing motion and get him to, you know, dial in that quarterback position. And some people might move him. Some people might say, hey, he's more like a Pat White, a guy who we can use as a wildcat guy. We've seen that offense really kind of, you know, take shape here in the NFL over the last couple of years. And to me, Tim Tebow is not a guy who's going to get drafted in the first round. And a team would be, you know, as far as with disservice to their fans if they went ahead and draft him in the first round just because they think they can put butts in the seats because he's not going to help them win games that next year.
Yeah, he would pretty much just be a celebrity draft pick more so than a guy that could actually help. But, I mean, that's the situation that the Jaguars are in right now, and they have to explore all options. It's very unfortunate. They had a lot of great seasons despite being an expansion team back in 95. I'm your host, Football Rob. I'm joined by Justin Van Volpin of NFLDraftBible.com. We are underway here. We got 16 minutes remaining in this one-hour show. We are not taking any commercial breaks because, you know what, I don't need any commercial breaks. We're talking football. You know, why would I want to take a break from talking football? So continuing on our pace, on our record pace here, let's talk about some draft picks that are coming up in 2010. We mentioned already Tim Tebow. Sam Bradford comes to mind because he's out with an injury right now. Do you think that hurts his draft stock? And a lot of people are talking about maybe he should have came out in the NFL draft last year.
Well, you know, he would have definitely been, you know, in that mix of being that, you know, number one overall pick, if, you know, with, you know, Mark Sanchez and Matthew Stafford, who eventually went number one. And, you know, the thing for him is that last year he was a redshirt sophomore, so he was eligible for the NFL draft. This year he's, you know, still has another year of eligibility left. So, you know, my thought is that he will come back for his senior season because, you know, he's going to miss 5-6 games this season and, you know, not be to the level of caliber that he wants to be able to play. So I see him coming back for his senior season and being able to get into the mix, if he stays healthy, of being, you know, the number one quarterback draft in the 2011 NFL draft.
You know, I want to get your opinion on this, Justin, but I'm not too high on this kid, Sam Bradford, because last season he had all day to throw in the pocket. He had about, you know, 7 seconds to make a decision, and everybody was open within, and there were no receiver, there were no defenders within 10 yards of the receivers. So, like, he had no wrong answer when it came to making a pass, and he was only hit about 45 times the whole year. The first time he gets hit this year, he's out with an injury. I think he's soft. What about you?
You know, I mean, that's definitely a valid point there. But I think the thing is, you know, if you can keep him upright, he's a very accurate passer. He throws a very catchable ball. He's a guy who, you know, can make the right reads. He's got a, you know, as far as that quarterback position, sometimes it's not about athleticism and stuff like that. It's about being accurate and making the right calls on who you're going to throw the football to. We've seen, you know, a guy like Tom Brady and the success he's had over the many years. And the reason why he didn't get drafted in the first round was because he wasn't, you know, that top-notch athlete. Wasn't have that gun like what we see with, Matthew Stafford. But he had the smarts and the ability and is, you know, a 3-time Super Bowl champion. So I think Sam Bradford mirrors to, you know, a Tom Brady. Will he have that success? You know, Tom Brady, you know, has, you know, we don't know yet, but I think he is an accurate quarterback who has very good football intelligence. So I think he's got a shot in the NFL. Will he be a superstar? You know, there's some limitations that do hold him back. And yeah, he does, you know, carry that kind of soft label because of, you know, getting injured on a fairly routine tackle here this season against BYU.
And give us a little insight on some other picks at quarterback position. I know Max Hall is a great quarterback for BYU. Give us some other guys that we should be looking out for. I know it's early for NFL Draft Talk, but this is NFLDraftBible.com, so this is what we do. Give us some insight on the 2010 quarterback class.
Well, you've got the two MAC guys. You know, we saw Dan LaFleur from, you know, Central Michigan, you know, pull up a you know, upset at Michigan State this past Saturday. You've got Tim Hiller, the quarterback there at Western, who, you know, has played, you know, not as well as a lot of people had thought these first two games, but he's definitely a guy that, you know, to keep your eye on. Tony Pike, the quarterback from Cincinnati, is a guy who's kind of moving up the draft, you know, stock there. And then obviously you've got Colt McCoy, who, you know, again, with Tim Tebow, the guys who could have came out this past year but decided to come back for their senior season. And Colt McCoy hasn't done anything to kind of hurt his stock. I mean, he's a guy who's still there, and, you know, it's going to take some due diligence on the NFL, you know, teams to see, hey, can this guy translate from a, you know, a spread offense to an NFL-style offense there? I think he can. I don't think he will be drafted as high as a Matthew Stafford and a Mark Sanchez just because he doesn't have that pure upside that those two guys had. But I think when it's all said and done, he'll be the first senior quarterback drafted. And then we'll have some, you know, guys, you know, as far as drafted in the lower rounds, you know, after with the senior quarterback positions, that could make some, you know, impact. I really like Dan LaFleur and Tim Hiller there in the MAC. We've seen a lot of guys, quarterbacks, before that's played in the MAC that's come and had success. Ben Roethlisberger, Byron Leftwich, you know, so there's been some success there with the MAC quarterbacks.
Yeah, and also Chad Pennington had a nice career there, continues to have a good career with the Miami Dolphins. How do you feel about, I might throw you off here, I don't know, but how do you feel about Juice Williams, the quarterback for the Illinois Fighting Illini? This guy has a lot of talent, cannon arm, very good athlete. He just seems like he can't be consistent all the time, but I feel that if he were consistent, he would have been, he has like first-round talent, but he doesn't know how to use those tools yet. How do you feel about his 2010 draft stock?
Well, I think what's going to happen to him eventually is he's going to it's going to go like Antoine Randall L, who Randall L was a quarterback there at Indiana and was a phenomenal athlete and was able to throw the football, you know, but his best position in the NFL was that receiver's position, that slot receiver, and he won a Super Bowl with the Pittsburgh Steelers and has been a productive receiver with the Washington Redskins. So I think when it's all said and done, you know, if Juice Williams decides to do what's best for him, you know, he goes ahead and, you know, makes that transition to being a receiver. But, you know, he's, you know, like we saw Pat White, you know, he could stick to his gun and say, no, I'm going to play quarterback. And he does that. He's not to the level of a Pat White. He would, you know, definitely as far as take a hit in his draft stock there. But he does have some talent. But it's like you said, he's very inconsistent. He's very raw. And that's the sad thing is he's been a starter for so many years, but he still makes freshman mistakes sometimes throwing the football.
Definitely agree with your assessment there. We're with Justin Van Volpen. I'm your host, Football Rob, on NFLDraftBible.com. Everybody in the chat room, Blog Talk Radio, and the Fantasy Sports Channel. So of course, Fantasy Sports Channel. We got a little draft talk. We got a little NFC West, NFC North. Now we've got to talk fantasy football. This is the moment all the fantasy nerds have been waiting for. Who do you think, Justin, will be the top performer in week two of the fantasy football season? I'm hoping you say Peyton Manning because I have him starting against Miami.
Well, I think, Adrian Peterson, I mean, he's going into the short line.
This is the whole problem. You're just supposed to say, yes, it is Peyton Manning.
Well, I think Payne's going to have a good game on Monday night, but the problem is, with they lose Anthony Gonzalez, and, they're going to bring in Hank Baskett, and, thoughts there. So I think their receiving position, besides Reggie Wayne and Dallas Clark, he doesn't have a lot of options that he's worked with. But he's going to have I expect him to have a pretty good game and then beat the Miami Dolphins.
So Adrian Peterson, what a surprise.
Hey, you wanted who was going to have the biggest performance, you know?
I think one guy, the fantasy guy that we're
talking about, and guys who I think really were disappointing in the first week that were drafted high, were the second-year running backs, Matt Forte, Chris Johnson, and Steve Slayton. I mean, those guys underperformed, vastly, and the question mark, was it just an anomaly their rookie season, or was it an anomaly this week one? Oh, and these guys are they going to bounce back here in week two and be, because they're all drafted in the first round. I mean, everybody wanted those three, second-year guys, expected big things out of them, and they all kind of faltered there in week one.
And I want to get your take on this, Justin, because I think fantasy football-wise, running backs are completely overrated. So when I had my fantasy draft, and by the way, the name of my team is Northwest Central Southern State University. So we're a BCS buster. We're coming on strong. We won our first game, and we're definitely going to make a run at the championship. But anyways, my whole draft strategy, because I had the third overall pick, I flipped down to the sixth pick because I know all these kids in my draft, they're going to pick running backs. And you know what I did? I turned around and picked Calvin Johnson and Larry Fitzgerald, and I think that you could get a lot of running backs off the wire that, like a guy like last year, like Peyton Hillis and Steve Slayton, you could have got off the wire last year. And guys like that, they just come along. I don't think that running backs are very valuable. But I think running backs are overrated in fantasy drafts. How do you feel about that?
Well, I think, we're seeing the, dual backfield, dual running backs, and that's where you look at it saying, hey, those guys are overrated. But when you've got a guy like Maurice Jones-Drew or Adrian Peterson or, Matt Forte, Michael Turner, those guys who are going to get the bulk of those carries and they really don't have a backup, Steven Jackson, those type of guys, they'll have a backup. They're not splitting carries. Those guys, to me, are valuable. And so the problem was this year's crop of fantasy football is there's only about a handful of those guys who aren't splitting, carries. So that's the issue. So if you were drafting, 10 in a 12 league team, you probably should, drafted a Drew Brees or a Calvin Johnson or a Larry Fitzgerald there instead of trying to draft a second tier running back who's going to split carries.
Yeah, that's really why I feel that way, is because, you know, you got running back by committee, and it seems like every team does that. The Patriots are doing it. The Jets are doing it. The Buffalo Bills are doing it since Marshawn Lynch is out with a suspension. The Dolphins do it. You know, you could just go on down the line. The Giants are doing it. Every team seems to have two or three running backs. The Buccaneers come to mind. I mean, I could just keep going. It would probably be easier for me to name teams that only have one running back, and that would save me a whole lot of breath. So that's why I really think that running backs are terribly overvalued in these fantasy drafts. I want to see what the guys in the chat room. How do you feel about this? I'm going out on a limb and saying running backs are overrated. Is anybody with me? Anybody at all? Steel City Storm, are you with me? I know you don't have a running game in Pittsburgh. Your best running back is Ben Roethlisberger. So, you know, if you want to chime in, go right ahead. I'm your host, Football Rob. We're with Justin Van Volpen of NFLDraftBible.com. And we're talking fantasy. We're talking fantasy football. And speaking of that, we've got to talk, Justin. We've got to talk about Ocho Cinco. Ocho Stinko, whatever you want to call him. He claims that he will score a touchdown and he will celebrate in Lambeau Field this week. How do you feel? Do you think he'll get there?
Well, you know, I mean, the Cincinnati's offense was putrid last week. They didn't, you know, they didn't score until the end of the game there when they had a running, you know, rushing touchdown there by Cedric Benson. But I think, you know, I mean, Chad Johnson or Chad Ocho Cinco, you know, is still a very good receiver, you know, and he could score there in Lambeau Field. And, you know, great for Chad. And he's done a great job of that self-promotion. I think it's come down to a self-promotion that now everybody thinks is, hey, you know, it's gone way too far and way over the edge, especially changing his name to Ocho Cinco, you know, as far as meaning 85 in Spanish, his number there. So, I mean, he's gone kind of over the limits, and I think people are getting sick of his act. I mean, it was great back 3-4 years ago when he was doing the river dance and he made the sign, you know, NFL, please don't find me. And everybody found that humorous, but he's gone a little too far now these days.
I think that he should change, since he's so into Spanish numerals, I think he should change his last name to Zero Uno, because that's what his career playoff record is. What do you think about that assessment?
Well, you're right on the money there. So, you know, Chad's not going to do that, but, hey, you know, maybe he could tweet that.
Yeah, I think he should, because, you know, and the other thing, I want to get this off my chest before we go. We only have 2 minutes left. We're with Justin Van Volpen of NFLDraftBible.com. I don't even think Chad Johnson, or whatever his name is, I don't even think he's that good. There's about 10 other receivers, and I have a list here. I have a list of all the receivers that I think are better than him. And I'm not talking career-wise, you know, all-time or whatever. I'm talking about 2009, Week 2, who would you rather have? So I'm going to go down this list, Justin, and I want you to chime in and see if you agree with this list of players that are better than Chad Johnson. All right, I got number one. Oh, this is in no particular order. I got Larry Fitzgerald, Andre Johnson, Calvin Johnson, Steve Smith, Randy Moss, T.O., Reggie Wayne, Roddy White, Marcus Colston, Anquan Boldin, and the 11th guy I'm going to name, just for good measure, his old teammate, T.J. Houshmandzadeh. I think all of these receivers are better than Chad. How do you feel?
You know, I mean, I think your list is pretty accurate there. I don't know if T.J. Houshmandzadeh is. I don't know if Colston is. Those are the two guys I would say I think are at, you know, Chad Johnson's level, is T.J. Houshmandzadeh and Marcus Colston. Good, you know, receivers, number one, you know, potential type guys. But there was a time, you know, not trying to defend Chad Johnson, but there was at a time, you know, a couple years ago where Chad Johnson was, you know, one of the top rated. He was one of the top 10, you know, receivers. The fact is he's not anymore, but, you know, there was a time he was. And, you know, unfortunately, Chad Johnson is not to that level anymore.
And the reason, of course, is the reason I'm picking on him is because he pretty much brings this on himself. His opinion of himself is a lot higher than his actual ability, in my opinion. So that's pretty much why I wanted to get that out there, get that off my chest, if you will. We only have one minute remaining, so Justin, real quickly, who everybody likes to gamble, and I'm a big-time gambler. Which is the best pick if you were to pick a game this week in the NFL? Can't-miss pick.
Can't-miss pick. I'm going to go Minnesota over Detroit. I know that's an easy one, but you wanted to can't miss, and people want to put their money down. Detroit loses again.
Well, it's a 10-point spread, though. That's what makes it interesting.
You know, that's close right there. I mean, so, you know, I don't know. I don't know what the other spreads are, but I would still, you know, if it's all said and done, you know, I think Minnesota goes 2-0 and it makes that push of, you know, trying to win a Super Bowl with, you know, Brett Favre.
All right, there you have it. There you have it. Minnesota continues the losing streak for the Detroit Lions. They will make it 19 in a row, according to Justin Van Vulpen of NFLDraftBible.com. I want to thank all our guests for calling in. I want to thank everybody in the chat room, including Steel City Storm, even though we have a stormy relationship going. That's all we have right now for the NFL Draft Bible. I'm your host, Football Rob, signing off.